The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And welcome to all of our listeners this morning and people watching also on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301 or on the PCTV Select app or any other way that you might be watching or listening to us. We appreciate you tuning in today. We have a great show for you this morning. We have Michael Hitchcock from Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds, and we have Sean Mannion from Berkshire Interfaith Organizing. And we're going to talk to both of these gentlemen about our housing crisis, homelessness, and the city ordinances that have been proposed. You may have been tuned into that if you were watching any of our city council meetings or reading the Berkshire Eagle. It certainly is an issue that everyone is discussing and talking about. We hope to explore that a little bit more here on the program this morning, get a deep dive into some of the issues that are facing us here in this community and around the state and the nation in a lot of ways. But we'll focus here on the Berkshires when we talk about it this morning. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service. Berkshire
weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, showers. Near steady temperature in the lower 40s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 90%. Tonight, showers. Lows around 40. Northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Becoming north 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of rain 80%. Friday, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Highs in the lower 50s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, so it's been a little cold, a little wet, a little rainy. It's not going to change for the next few days. I was hearing that Memorial Day is going to be a little bit better, somewhere in the high 60s, 70s with maybe some sun, but we have to get through the next few days of this before we get there, and it is just a little rainy, not a real soaker just yet today, but that's what we're seeing outside. All right, again, welcome to Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, and joining me here in the studio this morning, Michael Hitchcock and Sean Mannion. Good morning, both of you. Thanks for being here today.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. Good morning to you and to all the listeners out there.
Absolutely. So I wanted to have you on the show this morning because as anyone sort of paying attention to what's going on in the city recently, there have been some efforts from local government side about some city ordinances regarding homelessness, median strip, all kinds of different stuff that we've been seeing. But we're going to backtrack a little bit from that and talk about the issue at hand and what we have going on in the community and then maybe get to that. But before we do, maybe just give us a little background for both of you and the organizations you represent. I'll start with you, Sean Mannion from Berkshire Interfaith Organizing. Tell us about yourself and the organization.
Sure. So I am with Berkshire Interfaith Organizing. I'm the director and lead organizer there. I've been in that role since 2023, which is when I moved out here to the Berkshires. We are a small but nimble little group of folks united around our commitment, you know, whether that's from our faith or values, to organize together for social justice. The organization has been around for about 10 years, and over the years, you know, we've been a part of a variety of different initiatives. Recently, it includes some of these local issues related to housing. Last year, we organized in support of some tenants of mobile home parks to fight back against predatory rent increases. Historically, some of the other things that BIO, which is generally how we refer to it, has been involved in includes One great example is getting African-American studies back in the curriculum for Pittsfield Public Schools. I'm not sure if that's still the case today, but I think it was 2019 when BIO worked on that issue.
Okay. So fair to say a community organizing group.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. All right. And Michael Hitchcock from Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds. So that is a mouthful for a long name for an organization. But tell us what it does and tell us your role in the organization.
All right. I'm the co-director of Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds and the co-founder. Our mission is to increase working class ownership and control of the land, natural resources, government, economy, and culture. Which sounds wide to some people, but it's also really targeted. Anything that would increase regular people's control of how production is produced, goods are produced or distributed, anything that would increase our role in controlling legislation that controls us, any of that is within our mission. So that's why you find us in a lot of different places. Like I have a food security meeting tonight, and we're working on that a lot. Food sovereignty, the idea that regular people here from Pittsfield could own a whole part of our food system together. We run a food pantry and free clothing store. We develop worker-owned businesses, and it turns out we got involved when Miguel Estrella was murdered by police, which is our phrasing. We won't be flexible on that. They say we should say police-involved shooting or something. But we find out, you know, the working class can't prosper if they're dead was our angle. So we got involved in trying to get a change out of the way policing was done with limited results. But that issue's not over either. The coalition survives and still speaks. And part of that coalition still worked with us on this homelessness ordinance. So that's a very brief explainer of who we are and what we do.
Okay, great. And that's a really good overview. Obviously, both, I think you would describe yourselves as activists.
Sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah, more of an organizer than
organizing,
an activist.
Yeah.
But
that's
enough,
a good.
Yeah.
And I always say I just comb my hair and present myself as a very moderate, reasonable person with some radical ideas.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So let's talk about the current housing and homelessness situation, both in Pittsfield, and of course, it's not unique to Pittsfield. That's one thing. If anyone has been anywhere, you understand that these are issues that large to even moderately sized cities face on a regular basis, and I'm sure rural areas face as well. Lay the groundwork for that. Where are we at right now, both with housing? Is it something that is improving, getting worse? Is it, you know, encroaching more and more on middle class Americans and local people? And then when does it start to transition into the homelessness and the unhoused population? I know that's a big question. So just sort of give us an idea where we stand right now.
I think, I don't know, maybe one interesting place to start is, as far as the housing crisis goes, in the state of Massachusetts, according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, if you want to spend less than 30% or less of your income on housing for a one-bedroom apartment, you need to basically make $44 an hour to reside in this state. It's a little bit different here in the Berkshires compared to Eastern Mass, but it's not as much of a difference as some folks would like to believe.
And the 30% is the old sort of benchmark, right, of what you have 100% of your money coming in. Obviously, taxes are going to take a good chunk of that right away. And then, but your discretionary, your spendable income, how much can you put toward housing, right, food, transportation, all the other categories? And 30% tends to be that, okay, that's what you want to niche out there. But more and more people are finding that difficult, right?
And, oh, absolutely.
And why is that right now? Why are they finding it difficult to keep to that 30%?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I would start by saying that wages haven't kept up with our basic expenses, or the basic expenses that you need to survive and get by in this country and in Massachusetts as well. I think that's a key issue to look at. You know, $15 an hour doesn't get you very far as finding an apartment that you can afford, even $20 an hour, even $25 an hour. You know, when the cheapest apartment you can find in the Berkshires is generally around $1,000 a month, I mean, you got to be able to come up with $3,000 first, last, and security. It's not easy for a lot of folks.
Right.
And you got to be able to afford $12,000 a year. And, you know, I mean, that's better than Boston, right, where folks are paying $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month. But it's challenging out here when a lot of the jobs that are available are, you know, again, $15, $20, $25 an hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somewhere near 60% of our wages here are in the service or hospitality or lower rung medical industry. Like, I'll consider that a service industry thing, too, like when you're, even though it's a little more qualified. But the point is, all of these jobs are hovering around 15 an hour. So if you imagine taking home around $500 a week, and you see this average rent being around $1,200, you're seeing you're already hovering above 50% of your income just going to rent. And that involves a lot of suffering, especially in a place like here with insufficient public transportation and a city planning that's really set around driving. So you absolutely have high transportation costs here that you wouldn't even face in a larger city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the lack of public transportation, I would imagine, as well. Feeds to that, right? Because and that's why we actually had conversations like this on the show, you know, with elected officials, but also folks that work with nonprofit organizations and BRTA and places like that, where, you know, it's just a really different situation than a larger city like Boston, for sure, right? Where you think of the Berkshires as a place you need a car.
Yeah.
But as we all know, anyone who owns a car, that's an expensive proposition, too. So if you're talking about 50% for your rent or for your housing, and then you need some transportation and the public transportation isn't going to work for you for whatever reason, you know, what's left at that point?
Yeah, an average car payment would eat up about 25% of your wage at $15 an hour. An average car payment, not a lifted truck, nothing like that, just a modest sedan that could get $300 or $400 a month on your payment, $100 on insurance if you've been a good driver. That's 25% more of your income. That's not leaving a lot for food, and that means no entertainment.
It's
a wretched situation, which brings us into homelessness.
Right. And also, maybe talk about what's driving up the cost of housing and rent and things like that, because certainly the last bout of inflation that we've all experienced in after 2021, 2022, which if anyone's old enough to remember the 1970s, you know, that was the last time, maybe early 80s, when we had very high inflation. That just eats into everybody, right? There's no escaping that level of change. And then, you know, do wages keep up with that inflation, or does it just continue to erode the ability for people to, you know, pay the basic needs of life? But is the current housing situation, in other words, lack of housing, is that what's driving up some of those costs for housing here?
There's a few things, and Sean has a lot of data on this, but I want to start with a story that the listeners would really grasp, because it's not only wages, it's also the style of development and who development is for. So when I run the food pantry, I get homeless people coming in, I get poor people coming in. And one of these women this winter came in crying. She had been homeless for 3 days. She didn't know what to do. And after gathering herself, I was able to find out her story. And she lived in one of these properties managed by Blueprint Properties. They had come in and installed a granite countertop. That was the complete work they did. Everything else was the same. And they raised her rent by $750, almost doubling it. And that just set her right on the street.
And so in cases like that, is it your experience to know that landlords in general are looking to increase those rents because they know they can, because they know the market will bear it, and that they've got people maybe already renting those apartments that their only option for them is to find a way to move them out of those apartments so that they can get higher paying customers in? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, higher paying customers or turning a blind eye to overcrowding, because there are some families that I worked with 15 people living in a 3-bedroom apartment. Mm. It was the only way they could make it work. And the landlord then turns a blind eye to that. And then the landlord has power over them because they're in violation of health and safety. That's overcrowding. And you have immense power over them to kick them out. If they make any complaints about the maintenance, you could have any number of problems there that you as a landlord can just ignore, because you can just get them out of there. Everybody needs an apartment.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think also of the mobile home parks. I think it's a great example of this. I mentioned that we worked on this issue last year, and it's one that's been really interesting to me, because in spite of, you know, being in a place that's very vulnerable, right? If you're if you rent a mobile home or own a mobile home, you don't own the land underneath typically.
Right.
So you're very vulnerable to if the owner wants to sell it to a private equity firm, for example, like what's happening at Lake Anoda Village. You know, this is like part of, again, that development strategy or that development tactic of just saying, well, why would I, you know, have this property and, you know, get $700, $800 a month from working class people when I could do some minor upgrades or sell a mobile home park and redevelop it and make a lot more money out of, you know, a luxury condo or the granite countertop, raise the rent by a couple $100. You know, it's the basic market forces. And when housing is as scarce as it is, you know, relative to the need.
Michael mentioned something about development and the types of development that are happening, right? And, you know, what are the incentives right now for building more affordable housing? If that is one of the sort of the problems, the underlying problem is that there is not enough housing for all different strata of people who are looking for housing, whatever level that is. The affordable housing is the one probably that would have the least incentive to be developed and built, only because of what you just said. Where is it that someone is going to make the money back on that development? So is there enough of that going on, and are there enough incentives for it?
No, in my opinion, and if you ask a lot of people this, you're going to get a constellation of opinions, but I hope everyone will be persuaded by this, is that the fact that housing is treated as a private commodity for buying and selling and making a profit off, and everybody wants their return on investment, there is no real way to reconcile that with the need, that the absolute need for humans to have a place to live. The people
seems like in previous generations, though, that wasn't as much of a problem. I think of, you know, historically what happened after World War II. When people, there was a huge need for housing at that time, and there was this push to build affordable housing for young families, a lot of them, you know, coming back from the war or whatever. I guess that's a bit of the myth also, but a lot of that did happen, and that we still have a lot of that housing stock today, although it's been sort of redeveloped in some ways. But just though I think of the sort of the 2-bedroom capes and things like that that were very common to have been built in the 40s, 50s, early 60s. And there doesn't seem to be that kind of push these days to look for, you know, building housing for ordinary people.
There were brief times in our history where housing was considered an investment of our society rather than a chance to make money. That's what you're seeing, these wonderful buildings.
Yeah, I think, you know, back in that time period as well was a time of much greater union density. So, like, working class people had a lot more power and influence. And I think, you know, it's also important to note that those benefits weren't shared uniformly across this across our society. And, mm-hmm. and we can look mm-hmm. locally, right, at the legacy of redlining in Pittsfield and other cities in Massachusetts.
Yeah. And actually, I have invited Kamara Taliaferro from the NAACP to come on and talk about the redlining project that he was involved with unearthing and bringing forward, which I thought was a real eye-opener for the city and something that, you know, a lot of people these days really need to reckon with, the idea of what has happened and what the legacy of that is. So I do hope to talk to him more about that. And I'm sure the two of you are well-versed in this as well, and we could talk about that. But I know we want to stay on, you know, homelessness, but it is, there is a lot of things are tied together, right? In this way, I see Michael nodding, so go ahead.
Oh, they're definitely tied together.
Yeah.
These forces directly lead to homelessness. Mm-hmm. And we know that Black people are vastly overrepresented in homelessness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're more hidden because our main way we interact with the homeless is through police. Black people are already over-policed, so it is in their best interest to be even more underground than homeless people already feel. They're targeted all homeless people because you're not allowed to just be there. So that's why on the street, if you're looking down North Street, you will see a lot of white homeless people. You won't even know half of our homeless people are Black. Estimated. Nobody mm-hmm. knows exactly because so much of homelessness is hidden here. Mm-hmm.
And I will say there was some excellent reporting in the Berkshire Eagle this past weekend, if anybody had a chance to look at that, by Claire O'Callaghan, a reporter. And I'll just hold up that, you know, where would I go? That's the big headline, and that was a phrase that Michael, you repeated at the city council meeting. If I'm paraphrasing a bit, you know, fair enough, right? To ask that question, but we're going to get to that. Let's talk about, and we're again to remind our listeners, we're talking about homelessness, the housing crisis, city ordinances, and other things here this morning with Michael Hitchcock and Sean Mannion. Michael is board director and co-founder of Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds. Sean Mannion is a director and lead organizer at Berkshire Interfaith Organizing. So let's talk about that line between unhoused and housed, right? And what is the tipping point for many people? We sort of laid the groundwork to talk about income, not keeping up with expenses, not keeping up with the cost of housing, things like that. What are some of the triggers where someone goes from being housed to suddenly being on the street? Or is it more of a gradual process? What happens to people? Explain that.
I think there's a diversity of circumstances that can result in that, and it's hard to draw, you know, it's hard to paint with a broad brush, I guess you could say.
So give us some examples of what might happen or what you've seen.
One of the big ones is domestic violence.
Okay.
Whether it's partner violence or adult child, that is a huge one where people finally feel they got to get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Not a safe situation where they're housed, but they may not be prepared enough to go out on their own.
Yeah.
But they have no choice.
Most people who are the victims of abuse, they literally have no choice because their finances have been controlled and their options have been limited. Mm. And when they get out on the street, ironically, they're in higher danger of many other forms of abuse, but they're escaping the kind that has been hurting them so much. Mm-hmm. Huge trigger. Mm.
Yeah, another theme of this issue has to do with disability and, you know, how if you're a person with a disability or you develop a disability over time and you're no longer able to support yourself with, you know, an income high enough to pay the bills, you know, that's going to throw you closer and closer to that cliff's edge.
Mm. How about issues like mental illness? How much of that is connected with people that are unhoused in our community?
Yeah, there's three aspects of that. The first is that our community used to and still sort of does have really wonderful mental illness and developmental disability services. So when all those programs were vastly defunded in the 80s, a lot of those people were here and they just became homeless. Mm. So we still have some older people who are victims of that. Another thing, there is direct discrimination against people with mental illness, just flat direct discrimination where you can be denied housing. You just have to find an excuse to not violate the Fair Housing Act. But then the final thing is the slightly indirect problem with mental illness is when mental illness interferes with your work or your relations and puts you in danger of either a domestic violence or criminality situation or losing your job, both of those things will then lead into homelessness. And it's just an extra step between mental illness and that.
Mm. And so I guess the other question that I hear raised often is, the issue of substance abuse among homeless and unhoused. Is that a cause, or is that sort of a result? How frequent is that? Is that something that we see frequently in people that are on the street here in Pittsfield, or is that just more of the myth?
Well, I think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's certainly
a contributing factor, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it's also a convenient narrative for the folks that want to criminalize homelessness.
Well, that's why I'm bringing it up, right? To allow us to flesh that out a little bit. So is it just a convenient narrative, or is it a significant problem?
Yeah, so somewhere around, I can't remember the exact thing, but somewhere close to 60% of people in this city are using marijuana at some point in the year. And most of them are not homeless. But when you see a homeless guy vaping marijuana, there's a whole set of prejudices that get activated in a certain type of person's mind. And they like to blame somehow that they're lazy and on drugs. But in reality, when you're cold and sad and you can't get a job, you have nowhere to wash your clothes or shower, it's just a really unreasonable life, and you're spending the whole time looking over your shoulder to make sure the police aren't there. Drugs are a comfort to you. And so we don't even have an anti-drug rule. When homeless people come in drunk or high, there's no issue. They just have to follow the regular rules. Because being drunk or high is usually a substitute for seeking community and emotional support that is lacking in the homeless because they're so ostracized. In our opinion, it's really not, it's not the issue. It's more of a symptom that's been called the cause.
Well, I think, a lot of the narrative that you do hear is people talking about used needles, right? So let's bring that up. And, we're not injecting marijuana, right? It's the opioid crisis. But how much of an issue is that? And is that being, contributing to this issue? Go ahead.
I really understand people's concerns. Needles can be scary. My health professional friends laugh at this because in reality they're not terrified at all, but we understand people who aren't familiar can be scared, and I understand it's disgusting and dirty. But if I were in charge of the city and I felt there was a huge problem with needles, I would probably put up biohazard boxes around where people could dispose their needles rather than trying to criminalize people who are already on the edges.
Well, I mean, that's not a bad idea, right? And certainly in the last couple of years, there's been a big effort from the Berkshire Harm Reduction folks to get the Nalox boxes out and available for opioid overdose. In fact, we have one right outside the wall here at WTBR. So the idea of being able to have Sharps boxes available in certain places, maybe that would make a difference. Has that ever been proposed?
We don't know.
Not to my knowledge.
Interesting thought, right? Maybe we can get some ideas. You might be just joining us, and we're talking to Michael Hitchcock and Sean Mannion here about homelessness, the housing crisis, city ordinances. We'll get to that in just a minute when we get to the second half of the show. It's a very good and important conversation, something that we do like to bring to our listeners and know that there are real stories behind the headlines that you might see. And I'd really like to start off the second half of the program with an anonymous, but a story that you could each tell me about someone that you've encountered who is homeless, who is without a house, and maybe their situation and how they've evolved and where they've gotten to. So think about that as we enter the break, and we'll start off with that in the second half of the program. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We'll return with our conversation with Sean and Michael right after this. Stick around.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
PCTV Select is now available on so many platforms. You can get it with any device you have available, all free to download and use. If you're watching at home, use your Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, or Apple TV device, or even your computer, and see programming in full HD quality. Watching on the go? Download PCTV Select from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store for your smartphone. It's that easy and free. PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is.
Go through the process of making a monthly budget, even if it's not perfect. It's good to be aware of your financial health.
When shopping for insurance, ask your agent to shop around for you and see if you can bundle your policies.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Hi, my name is Al Perlman, and I love jazz. Mostly jazz from the bebop and beyond period of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I also love sharing my passion for jazz from my extensive jazz vinyl collection with listeners here in Berkshire County. So please join me on Sundays at 8 p.m. for my show Jazz Collector Live on WTBR FM Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, also 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And welcome to all of our listeners this morning. We are going to continue our conversation now with Michael Hitchcock and Sean Mannion, talking about homelessness and the housing crisis and the city ordinances that have been proposed and are currently working their way through city committees. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, showers. Near steady temperature in the lower 40s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 90%. Tonight, showers. Lows around 40. Northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Becoming north 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of rain 80%. Friday, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Highs in the lower 50s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. A little cold for late May. We usually like it a little warmer than this when it comes to, what is it, May 22nd already? And it's this cold outside. Crazy. Feels like late March out there. But we'll get through it, and I see next week is going to be a little bit warmer maybe still a little bit unsettled as far as the weather goes. Again, Michael Hitchcock and Sean Mannion join me. Michael is the board director and co-founder of Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds. Sean Mannion, the director and lead organizer at Berkshire Interfaith Organizing. Thanks again for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So I kind of teased at the end of the last half hour if we could come up with, give me a day in the life or a story of someone who is homeless, unhoused here in Pittsfield on the street. We've talked about some of the conditions that might lead to that. What's it like being homeless in Pittsfield?
Go ahead. Well, there are two distinct experiences of homelessness, and one is when you have a job and you're trying to hide from everyone that you're homeless.
Mm.
And then there's
so
the one where
really you're working poor is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're working, but you still can't afford to live somewhere.
And nobody knows you're homeless because there's such a shame about it, and you're doing everything you can to hide it. Your coworkers don't even know. And then there's the other kind, which is you're more visibly on the street and you have nothing. So that's the one guy I'm thinking of. I met him on a moving job. He was busting his butt, packing a moving truck, working so hard, and the boss was just sitting there watching him. The boss, he makes a really good cut just sitting on the chair, micromanaging people and criticizing them. I was shocked as somebody who was just helping the person who hired them. But this guy seemed really cool, and we got to know each other over the course of a day of hard work. And that guy got in a fight with the boss eventually, which I would have as well. I almost did it just as a regular guy. The boss was horrible. So this guy, he lost his job. He has conflict with the mother of his child. So when they can't get together anymore, he just leaves. They're not getting along. And when you leave, you leave in this temper, but then where are you supposed to go is a great question again. So now, on his daily life, there's no room in the shelter, so he sleeps where he can sleep. There's a few flop houses around in certain neighborhoods where you can pay $20 to sleep on a couch or a floor space or something. There's a few crack houses that you could do the same, or you can find a quiet place outside. But eventually, like what happens to him, the police will harass you, rough you up, take your tent away, which then you just have to start all over. He is a hard worker, but he's struggling. The conditions of his life are traumatizing. And so one day I saw him at the library. I asked how you are, and he just started weeping because he could tell I was actually asking. And then he was so ashamed he ran into the bathroom. While he was in the bathroom, he saw another homeless guy who asked him about how he was doing. And this guy, just the frustrations were coming out, and he started screaming. This is normal. And then I like to work in the library a few days a week if I can, because I'm accessible to the public there. So then the library staff, I heard my little red flag went off. They started talking about yelling in the bathroom, and I said, oh, pardon me, everybody, I actually know this guy. Let me go in, because the library people know I'm a respectable guy. So I went in and I talked to them all. The library people don't know that I said this, but I said, hey guys, I understand that what's going on here is normal, but I need to take enough time with you so that they think I'm handling a situation. They all laughed. They understood what I was saying. And then I went back out and explained to the library, but they were talking about calling the police because they were frightened by all this yelling. That's his normal life, is just going somewhere until somebody thinks about calling police, going out to beg until he gets a few dollars, enough maybe for a hot drink, and then going to find some hidey hole. Hopefully he made enough money to sleep inside that night. It's not a great life. And this guy is a hard worker who I respect as a man. I just like him. We have each other's phone numbers. It's not just some faceless guy to me.
And in a lot of cases, these are folks that, had a different life before coming to this reality, right? Yeah. So there are many of them that... most of them, I would say, probably not wanting to be there, not wanting to do what they're doing, and yet that's what the situation is. Sean, did you have a story you had?
Yeah. I know somebody who as far as I know, born and raised in this area. They are in a relationship. They had a place that was, you know, a relatively sustainable apartment that they were renting. Because of some conflicts that came up between this person and their significant other, and then between them and their landlord, and the landlord's desire to, you know, transition them out of there, get somebody who's going to be in a more quote-unquote stable situation and that they could charge more rent, this couple ended up having to leave suddenly. They really did not have the their ducks in a row, so to speak, to transition that quickly. And they would have been homeless if not for a really exceptional circumstance that came up where they were able to obtain some housing for the medium term.
Okay.
Another recent experience, I mean, just this last weekend, I went out to Cathedral of the Beloved, which is a congregation here in Pittsfield that ministers not exclusively to the unhoused, but particularly tries to meet that community where they're at. I went out there, I spoke to a few people. Some of them were plugged into this issue insofar as it's like a current political event, and we'll get into that in a bit. But, you know, it was really just interesting to meet all these different folks and hear a couple different perspectives. A few people that I talked to had, you know, maybe they had rented a room, maybe they'd couch surfed for a while. They'd been working their entire life, but never were able to afford, you know, a dignified apartment or something stable, sustainable, long term. Just like that perpetual sort of instability and the state of precarity, you know, being precarious. Yeah.
Never quite being able to put it all together to, you know, stay stable or to put a little bit of money away for those things that come up, right? And I think the national statistic I've heard is that a great majority of Americans don't have $400 in the bank for some sort of an emergency, like a car repair or, you know, an appliance going bad or something like that.
60% of us are paycheck to paycheck. So just imagine if you're squeezed that tight and you suddenly get a rent increase from your landlord. You get into some kind of a medical emergency or some other kind of financial emergency. You get into a car accident. If you suddenly get that financial emergency and you can't pay the next month's rent, I mean, what? Again, 60% of us are paycheck to paycheck. So
that's
you
a
might
situation
not
that
be homeless today.
Yeah.
But many, there's, I think, about 200 folks who are sleeping rough in Pittsfield in 2025. But there are thousands of us that are just one financial emergency or a couple missed paychecks or Social Security checks away from being in a very, very similar place.
Yeah. And I would imagine a lot of our listeners would identify with that in a lot of ways, knowing that that is the way many Americans and many people in the Berkshires do live, paycheck to paycheck and with no safety net.
Yeah.
So let's jump over to the city ordinances that have been proposed. And, of course, the city, through the pandemic and through the ARPA funds, have put millions of dollars toward working toward making up some of the inequities of housing and temporary housing, right? There's a couple of tiers of things that are being built or have been built. Right now, there's the new shelter at the First United Methodist Church. There's some housing being built into the Zion Lutheran Church. There's another one happening down on West Housatonic Street, right? Seems like all of those things are a good start in some ways, right? But maybe not meeting the demand completely yet, even after all those resources are put in. And then we have the proposals. Let's talk about the first one that came up earlier this year, which was the median safety ordinance, if you will, or basically everyone knows it as the anti-panhandling, right, to deal with the number of people standing in the medians, waiting for people to come to a traffic light and asking for money. That was an ordinance that did not seem to get a lot of traction at City Council and did fail. What was your impression of that ordinance?
This was one where it's never our position that we think begging is a great way of life. Mm-hmm. But we immediately saw in the language that this was just a way to push people along so that the tourists and the second home real estate investors don't have to see them. Go beg in Melville Street parking lot. Go beg in Big Y parking lot. Get off of our medians. Mm-hmm. We took it as a really, really regressive, reactionary, anti-poor legislation. And it was an insult to our community, in our opinion.
And not only that, it also threatened to make either illegal or difficult to do a wide variety of other First Amendment protected activities. Mm-hmm. You know, protest, just going out there, waving a sign around for whatever your cause is. And I think it's also important to note that this ordinance targeted some particular intersections, which are part of the sort of commercial centers of the town, you could say. And that was particularly alarming for the reasons we've talked about, but also, you know, I mean, yeah, of course, people have to be able to enter, whether they're in a car or on a bus, into, for example, like a parking lot over by the shopping mall. But if we ban standing along the median or like taking one step into the road, I mean, maybe I'm a worker there and I want to unionize and I want to stand out there with my picket line and, and do that. Maybe I have a political party or a candidate that I want to support. You know, maybe I just want to exist. Mm-hmm. And this is public land. It's public property. This ordinance had a lot of problematic implications, although it, of course, came from this effort to criminalize panhandling.
Do you think that there is a safety component of that ordinance somewhere in there, though? I mean, I understand where you're coming from. Is there a kernel of truth in there to say that that the people could be potentially at risk of getting hit or whatever might happen?
Most of the stories I heard were about people who almost got hit, which you take that as you will. But the real point here is that Berkshire Regional Planning put together a report for hundreds of thousands of dollars and delineated all of the most dangerous intersections, ranked them, and ranked all of the most dangerous situations that lead to accidents.
Dangerous situations for car accidents or for car, pedestrian, everything?
Every kind of accident there was ranked, and panhandling never made the list. If you were really flexible, intellectually flexible, you could shoehorn panhandling into the 12th most dangerous situation they listed. But if you read that report, panhandling's not in there. So we didn't, even though we agree public safety is important and we will take everyone as sincere who says they're concerned about public safety, we say, if you believe in public safety, why don't you follow the public safety report you bought?
Okay. Fair enough. Are other communities in Berkshire County facing similar issues, or is this really more of a Pittsfield thing based on our population and our urban density? Is this something why Pittsfield has to? I don't see stories about Stockbridge or Great Barrington dealing with issues or ordinances like this, or North Adams even. So is that specific to Pittsfield? I would imagine it's more likely to be dealt with in larger cities in Massachusetts.
Yeah, begging does follow density and population. Mm-hmm. I've seen a few panhandlers in North Adams. It doesn't seem to be a big focus.
Mm-hmm. So it's something that we are uniquely working on here, at least in this county.
Yeah.
Here in this county, yeah.
There are beggars in Great Barrington as well, and the community yells about it, but I haven't seen any big action either way.
Mm-hmm. One other thing that I think is important to note is, you know, around these sort of anti-homeless ordinances or policies, this is part of a trend that's been happening across Massachusetts and across the country, especially since this 2024 Supreme Court decision, Grants Pass versus Johnson, which basically says that the Eighth Amendment doesn't really apply for people experiencing homelessness, cruel and unusual punishment, you know, whatever. Make them criminals for falling asleep in public.
Well, and that follows the more conservative Supreme Court and the rulings that they've been making in the last 4 or 5 years. So no surprise there, right, that would be the case. Let's talk about the most recent ordinance that's proposed and still working its way through city committees, which is basically banning encampments in city park areas, right, public spaces. Your thoughts about that?
This might not be a surprise to you, but my thoughts are very similar as a lot of other issues. Fix the underlying problem before criminalizing the people contributing to that problem. Put up needle boxes and trash cans before you criminalize them. Build housing before you criminalize people for trying to sleep. For me, it's that simple.
I think one of the things that was in the Eagles reporting this past weekend was the concept, I think what the mayor brought up about maybe coming up with a year-round warming center for unhoused. Is that something that would be appealing? Would that help in any way? Is that part of the solution?
It's definitely more reflective of a solution than just making unhoused people into criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So I support that. I think it's a good idea. You know, I think it's also important to look at some of the other things that are part of this ordinance. Not only would it be a crime to set up a tent on public property to survive the night, it would be a crime to aid and abet violations of this ordinance. So if you are handing out tents, if you are helping people, again, to survive, you could be a criminal as well, and you could get a fine. I believe it's up to $300.
Hmm.
Furthermore...
So would that include someone allowing their homeless brother-in-law to set up a tent in their backyard for more than 3 days?
You
exactly,
got it.
Yeah. Hmm. And, you know, maybe that is a person who is a homeless relative or loved one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just have the wrong kind of tourists.
Well, explain that. Expand on that a little.
Well, you know, I mean, if I owned land and I had somebody that I wanted to invite to stay and enjoy the beautiful Berkshires for, heaven forbid, 4 nights in a row, I would be a criminal here. You know, and I just think that that is important to look at as well.
How about sleeping in cars? Does it affect that?
I think that was a blind spot in that.
Mm.
You know, I would have to reread it to see it. Do you remember anything about that?
I think it's included in there.
It was not our focus. Oh, wow.
So I guess, you know, overall then, and I think you mentioned a couple of them, what are more solutions that could be brought forward to work on this? Because, again, the concept of homelessness is not a new one. It's not something that has just been foisted on the community, right? Yeah. Maybe people now are just starting to recognize it because it's making its way into the front pages.
Yeah.
You know, what going forward, how can we start to ameliorate some of those problems? I don't think, is there ever a chance that it goes away completely?
I think there is a chance.
Really?
Yeah. But
that's an optimistic view.
Communities out there that have adopted, you know, efforts to quote-unquote end homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
It's really functionally ending homelessness rather than, you know, you're never going to prevent anyone at all from falling into that circumstance.
Yeah.
But if you embrace those kind of policy solutions, if you have a really aggressively pro-housing, pro-shelter strategy, you can really do a lot to reduce homelessness to like an absolute minimal level.
And what we've seen that makes me really happy is the conversation before was just about complaining about homeless, but now I'm seeing even the most loyal right-wing hate-filled commenters on the Eagle website or whatever, even they are starting to talk more about solutions instead of just complaining about the homeless. So we've seen all kinds of community suggestions of campsites, buying properties, et cetera, et cetera. And all we want is a community collaboration where we agree housing is a priority. We don't need to have our specific idea come forth. The guy I told you about who's homeless and almost got arrested or had the police called on him in the library, yesterday we were chatting and he said, "Oh man, they must have all these decommissioned buses. Why don't you, we've got a lot of skills. Why don't you just let us turn those decommissioned buses into some semi-permanent housing. And I was like, no one had suggested that, but that's what a nice idea. They're already waterproof. They're already useless.
How about sanitary issues, though? How do you deal with that?
You have to dig a septic, or you'll have to build it close enough to the city. In my opinion, it should be closer to the city so people have access to other services and entertainments. Mm-hmm. But either way, that's not an obstacle to say, no, we shouldn't do it. That's a nice problem to solve.
Yeah. Well, and again, we solve problems at the city level with our budget. And actually, the city council and the mayor just kicked off that budget process last night. And of course, that's when we start talking about what the priorities are for spending in our community and to solve problems, right? So what kinds of resources do you think the city should throw at this particular problem, and where would that money come from? What other budgets? Because that's kind of the deal that you have to make, right? When you're making city budgets, is where's the money going to go? You're allocating scarce resources, you know, to one thing or another. Is it going to come out of something else? What are we going to do?
So, when former Chief Mike Wynn said he was sending out an average of one call per hour, 24 hours a day, on homeless nuisance complaints. Mm. I got to work on the back of my envelope here, and I realized that they're spending a minimum of $600,000 a year police budget on that. Mm. Now, the mayor's saying he's going to send co-responders instead, but that doesn't really reduce the price, because that's just another person that's accompanied by the cops. So,
but that was in response to issues that we had in the city, where sending a police response to something might not have been the best tool in the toolbox, right? That a co-responder might have been the better person to send.
Yeah, but either way, it's a huge expense. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see them, for once in their lives, reduce the police budget by however much they're already spending on homeless enforcement and aggressively redirect that money straight into this issue. I'm not asking for anything crazy, only the exact amount they're already spending to respond to homelessness by sending police and co-responder. Just take that away and spend it a different way.
But you're also saying then that you wouldn't need any police response to homelessness? Because there might be situations where you might, right?
Yeah, but then that's a question of like bookkeeping, because the police are going to respond to a murder anyway, whether or not it's a homeless person or a housed person. They're going to respond to a theft anyway. So when I'm talking about homeless nuisance complaints, I am literally talking about when people call and say, there's a guy camping, there's a smelly, dirty... That's what these homeless nuisance complaints are. Mm-hmm. Drunk and disorderly on the street. They wouldn't be there if they had a house. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of complaints.
Well, and you kind of bring up a good point there, as we're about 2 minutes away from the end of the show, which happens really quickly here. You know, is there something that everyone can do to change sort of their outlook of how they react to someone who is either unhoused or who might be panhandling or whatever, right? The attitudes and the things that we do, calling the police on someone, is that necessary? You know, are there switches that we can throw to react differently to folks in these situations?
Well, one thing that
would that help?
One basic thing that I just encourage people to do is, you know, to think of themselves as, what if I were in their shoes, and really think about how far away you really are from being in that situation, again, with so many of us paycheck to paycheck.
I would love to see it, if anyone really wanted to. Don't go home tonight after work. Don't get a hotel room. Figure out where you got to go with just, you're on the street. If you really want the big challenge, don't use your car either. Figure out where you would go. Mm. Actually try it. You could go home at the end. It's just a thought experiment. But walk around and try to see where you would sleep. It's going to blow your mind, actually, if you actually try to, just for a few minutes, put yourself into the mindset.
Yeah, that's an eye-opening thought process, isn't it? And the first thing you think of is how to stay dry, how to stay warm, how to stay safe, right? I'm imagining all those things go through your head.
Well, I was briefly homeless, and I did sleep one night in a cardboard recycling dumpster. I said, oh, it's soft, it's dry, perfect. Mm. And then in the morning, another homeless guy grabbed my head because he was trying to dumpster dive. He thought I was something else.
Wow.
It was really funny. We both laughed, but we were both terrified for a moment. He thought I was a dead body, and I thought he was going to hurt me.
I don't want to laugh, but it is a funny story. I want to thank both of you, Sean Mannion and Michael Hitchcock, for being here on the show this morning, opening our eyes and giving us a different perspective maybe than what we normally hear. If anyone needs to contact you, how do they do that real quick?
You can send an email to communications@biorganizing.org to get in touch with us at Berkshire Interfaith Organizing.
I'm really accessible. Michael@rootsandmustardseeds.com. And you can even have my phone number, 413-242-8081. I'm super accessible.
All right, that's it, everybody. Have a great day. Take care.